Today's podcast is sponsored by the people at Aura.com. Now, Aura offers identity theft protection, fraud monitoring, a VPN, password management, and antivirus software all in one easy-to-use app. This means that if your online accounts or passwords are leaked online, you'll be alerted quickly, which means that you can be secure from hackers, scammers, and noisy advertising companies. The narcissists are everywhere. Literally, a friend of mine signed up and Aura found his passwords 9 times on the dark web. So go to Aura.com/Dr. Carter. That's Aura.com/Dr. Carter. And use my link and you'll receive a free 14-day trial. And if you continue, then you'll be able to save an additional 40% off all plans. So thanks to the people at Aura.com for sponsoring this episode.
Welcome to this week's episode of the Surviving Narcissism Podcast. I'm Michaela, the program director, and I would like to start this episode with a quick introduction. For those of you not familiar with surviving narcissism, it is a product of many years of work done by Dr. Les Carter. Dr. Carter is a best-selling author and therapist with more than 40 years of experience, specializing in anger management and narcissistic personality disorder. This week, Dr. C's topic is, what drives a malignant narcissist?
Hey there, Team Healthy. I hope this day finds you well, and I hope that you're in a learning mode because that's exactly what I'm hoping we can do here today. I'm going to dive in today and zero in on the concept of malignant narcissism. Now, perhaps you've already heard of that term, malignant narcissist or malignant narcissism, and actually it was a term that was coined by Eric Fromm, who's one of the giants in the field of psychology. But when we talk about a malignant narcissist, this is what we're referring to when we refer to somebody who's all the way down on the narcissistic spectrum. You know, you've heard me say before that narcissism is indeed a pattern on a spectrum. And we all have some elements of narcissism that we can tap into. For example, each one of us can have our moments where we're selfish or we're insensitive, which means our empathy gear is not totally intact, or we can have control moments, or we can sometimes come across in a condescending way. Healthy people, though, they see that in themselves and it's like, wait a minute, I can do better. I don't need to let those kind of ingredients run. I don't want to be known for that. And so they develop insight so that they can go into a much better direction. That's what I'm hoping that you're doing as part of your contributions to Team Healthy. When we talk about narcissists, though, they have those ingredients on the inside. And as they age and as they come deeper and deeper into the adult years, not only do those ingredients begin to abate, they actually increase and they become more and more pronounced. And then when a person is all the way down on the far end of the spectrum into malignant narcissism, we're talking about dealing with somebody who's an incredibly difficult person. Now, I want to give you an illustration of how this can work. Now, this is just one illustration out of dozens that I could give you. But let me just kind of describe. We have a middle-aged, let's say 40-ish, 45, accomplished young man who has done quite well financially and in his business circle. And he's one of these kind of guys that when you meet him, it's like you have two reactions, at least I did. One reaction is, wow, this guy really knows his stuff and he seemed to be very on top of it. But then on the other hand, the other thought that came to my mind as I met this fella is, this person seems to be a little bit too forward. And he had what I refer to as over behavior. You know what I mean when I say over behavior? They're over curious about you. Well, tell me more. And you realize they're data gathering. They over smile. They're over friendly. They're over helpful. And then, of course, then they're also over opinionated. And it's an exaggerated part of ingredients that otherwise might be normal. But in fact, they just take it to such an extreme because it's a part of their control mentality. They have a very strong and overbearing kind of personality. This fella had a mindset with respect to family that more or less, he wouldn't say it this way, but it was more or less predicated on the idea that the woman is supposed to be barefoot and pregnant, if you know what I mean. So they had several children, and she had good career possibilities herself, had a college degree and had started out with a good job. But it's like, you don't need to do that. I'm going to take care of everything. Little did she know that he was actually hiding a lot of money and sacking it away that she didn't need to know about, at least according to him. And then as the years went by and she had 3 and 4 and 5 children, she became so overwhelmed by her kids that that pretty much took up her activities. And it's like, well, they don't need to go to regular schools. You need to stay home and homeschool them. And she didn't want to, but he put a lot of guilt on her, so she did. She became isolated, did not have the opportunity as she wished to develop friends. And as a result, she lived more and more just in a secluded kind of way. And then as this man continued on through the years, he became increasingly angry. He became someone who would very readily mock and ridicule, especially her, sometimes the kids, but especially her. Daily criticisms and insults would come along, and she became more and more depressed. And then as the unhappiness of her life and her dissatisfaction with his many mandates came more and more to the forefront, then he would come on with high, and I mean high, dominance. And there would be lots of punishments with respect to privileges, if you can imagine that, between a husband and wife, being withdrawn and letting it be known that you're gonna live in misery if you go against me. And so she had to filter everything through him. And then she finally decided through some counseling, I've had enough. I'm not going to do this anymore. This is too much. And if that wasn't enough, then what she saw was even more and more rage. And he brought in the expensive lawyers, made sure that she had access to very low levels of money. And it was just an absolute mess. And she would sit in my counseling office and she would talk with me about how I have absolutely no sense of who I am anymore because this person completely took over not just my personality, but my life, my preferences, my desires, my choices. I just felt like I had no capacity to be me. That would be an example of someone who had what we refer to the penchant towards malignant narcissism. The harshness, the meanness was so exaggerated and so persistent, and there was hardly any willingness whatsoever on his part to do any kind of negotiating. I mean, his mindset would be, well, okay, you want to negotiate with me? Let me tell you what it is. And then when you say, well, let me tell you my thoughts. Nope, end of discussion, we're done. That's how they think, and that's the malignant narcissist. Now, you may not have that exact same set of circumstances. It may not be the person that you're married to, but it could be that you grew up with someone like that. It could be that you have siblings who are that way. When family gatherings happen, then they show up and it's miserable for everyone else. It could be that you have someone that you work with who has this really strong my way or the highway kind of mentality. And I want you to understand there are things going on inside that person that drives them. And we need to understand what's going on there because there's an ingredient that just naturally accompanies the malignant narcissism. And that is, if there's a problem here, well, it must be you because it can't possibly be me. They truly have such an exaggerated positive sense of who they are to the extent of thinking there's special and then there's me several notches above that. Nobody can touch me in terms of my capacity to do things and nobody can touch me with respect to my reasoning abilities. Anyone besides me that doesn't think like me is a total idiot. That's how they think. So what's going on here? When we're looking at someone who has this very strong malignant style of narcissism. Well, first, there are many things that these people are sitting on that they have not come to terms with at all. And frankly, they don't even feel the need to because they have next to no psychological insight. But first and foremost, we can say that malignant narcissists have an almost complete void of emotional attachment. One of the primary ingredients of narcissism is a lack of empathy. And when we talk about malignant narcissism, we're talking about the lack of empathy on steroids. It's like, I don't care to understand you. I don't care to know what your opinions are, your thoughts, your perspectives. I don't want to know things from your vantage point because you see, it's all about me. And so they don't really take the time to build bridges down at the heart level. It's like, that's for idiots. That's for losers. I don't do that because if I try to understand you for what you are, and if I become attached to your thoughts and feelings and needs, then that means that maybe we have a certain element of equality here, and I don't do equality. I do superiority. That's how they think. Now, in addition, there's another major ingredient that goes into the making of malignant narcissism. And that is, they have an underdeveloped conscience to the point to where you can hardly even call it a conscience at all. You know, we all want to have some grid in our minds, some filter system that says, well, there's a moral code here and we need to pay attention to it. There's a sense of ethics that we need to adhere to. And the narcissist is like, well, yeah, there's a moral code and there's a sense of ethics. And it happens to be whatever I declare it to be today. And if it doesn't work for me, then we'll just move the rules around so that it does. And they have no feeling of accountability with others. They don't really have any sense of guilt or shame whenever they do things wrong. Because you see, in the world of the malignant narcissist, if there's a problem, at least as far as they're concerned, well, it's not me. So they don't have guilt because if there's a problem, you caused it, and they think it's my job to squelch you and make sure you don't cause any more problems, just like that man did with his wife whenever she would say, I'm not happy or I'm not pleased or let's consider something else. It would be like, oh, so you have a different thought. And then there would he would come down with the proverbial hammer on her. Now, in addition, you can see that another really strong theme with the malignant narcissist is dominance. And these individuals learn very early in life that dominance, authority, the place of power, that's what makes you a somebody. And so in their mind, they must have had some sort of observations or experiences where they learned that in life, the people who survive are the controllers. And so it's like, I'm going to become one of those. I'm going to be someone who calls the shots, who establishes the rules, who metes out all of the punishment whenever it's necessary. You're going to see me as someone that you have to come to terms with. You're going to see me as someone who is a force to be reckoned with. And they actually take delight when other people might say to them or about them, man, this is a really strong-willed person. And they're over there smiling, thinking, you got that right, and I'm real proud of that. They think that dominance is the ultimate form of having made it. Now, as you might see then, these individuals, in the way that they conduct themselves, they are drawn towards themes of power. Now, to give you an example, they may have heroes in business, and the heroes are the ones who shove their grandmother aside in order to get what they want. Or they may have heroes in politics. They may actually be one of them. But these are the individuals who are extremely dogmatic, authoritarian, who take no input from anyone else. They don't make alliances. You just have to deal with them point blank. And if you don't, they're just going to mow you over, and they're impossible to engage with. Or it could be that they like entertainment themes that have this real strong and overbearing kind of thing. They like, you know, to kill the umpire and beat him up and gouge their eyes out and hit him hard. And they're drawn towards that kind of a mindset. And as a result, it illustrates there's a lack of compassion, and there's certainly a lack of any appreciation for differences that might be there in front of them. Again, we go back and say power and might is the ultimate aphrodisiac, if we can call it that, that they are attracted to. Now, another, I just mentioned that they have an underdeveloped conscience. Another element, though, of narcissism is they do know right from wrong. And by the way, one of the ways you can tell they know right from wrong is they keep secrets. In other words, they'll reveal certain things about themselves to some people, but then other folks that they're trying to make that positive impression upon, it's like, that might not serve me well. So they know the difference between what's correct and what's incorrect, what's socially appropriate and what's not. They know what's there, and it's as illustrated by their penchant towards being secretive or being defensive or just letting people know on a need-to-know basis whatever is going on in their life. They know what's right and wrong, but they just don't care about what's right. They care about one thing, and that is, what's expedient for me? And so when you say, well, can you appreciate that I have a thought here? And they're thinking, it's like, no, I don't appreciate that. If it's not my thought, then as far as I'm concerned, it doesn't exist. Or if you say, well, can we appeal to this standard or these people or standard order procedure that we have over there? It's like, not impressed. And it's really interesting, by the way, sometimes you can even have people who are malignant narcissists who gravitate towards groups that you might think would represent morality, whether it's, let's say, the teaching profession or religion or things like that. But even there, they can approach those kinds of positions with that authoritarian right, I'm right and you're wrong kind of a mindset, and they just latch on to whatever authority might be afforded to them in those positions, and it's part of their rationalization to themselves that, well, the world needs to go according to me, even in those kinds of arenas. And it's rather scary to think that they can rationalize away the good things and they can put themselves in the middle of it and say, we just need to do what I say and everything's going to be a lot better. I'd like for you to be aware of my video courses. One is entitled Ready, Set, Connect. Now, narcissists are quite capable of throwing you off balance, so this course keeps you focused on the skills and the mindset that are necessary for positive connections. And inside the course, we have various modules that, and inside each module are lessons, and each lesson contains a video, written documents, and then questions that go along with it. We'll discuss things like how to have good conflict resolution skills, building empathy, how to be the authentic self that you need to be. If you're interested in enrolling, you can go to our website, survivingnarcissism.tv, click the link for courses. You'll find Ready, Set, Connect there, as well as the others. I hope that you would find them to be quite helpful.
And now back to Surviving Narcissism with Dr. Carter.
Now, in addition to that, then, you can see that these would be cold-hearted individuals. They tend not to be impressed by soft and tender kinds of moments. How many of you, just taking an aside, how many of you enjoy spending time with a little five-year-old child and the wonder that's in their eyes and just seeing how easily impressed they can be and how they can have fun, and you can take small things and turn them into acts of true curiosity. And there's a tenderness that's there and an innocence that's there that that little child has, or a friend or someone who's ill or someone like that, and you realize that this is such a wonderful place where I can step in and share in the gentle moments with another individual. The malignant narcissist looks at something like that and says, well, I'll tell you what, that's not for me. And they don't really enjoy tender moments. And another, this is a little aside, little things that would seem to be nurturing, like giving people gifts or cooking goodies and things like that. It's like, nah, I don't do that. Now, in addition, we can say that part of what drives the malignant narcissist is they want you to be loyal to them. But loyalty is not something they just desire or even crave. They see your loyalty to them as being their birthright. It's like, I showed up in your life. Now, what are you going to do to prove that you're loyal to me? Now, when you say, well, what are you going to prove that you're loyal to me? It's like, we don't do that. It's a one-way street. And as a result, they have this notion that says people owe me, people need to give me whatever it is I want. And when we say that narcissists seek out narcissistic supply, they want to be adored, they'll take this notion of your narcissistic supply towards them to the farthest extreme. And then as a result of all of this, we can also say that with the malignant narcissist, they have a strong sense of paranoia. Whenever you come against that malignant narcissist, whenever you differ or whenever you challenge them, you're going to see a wall of defensiveness that's going to be thick and high and powerful. It's like, you will not come against me. And if you even say something that isn't even challenging, it's like, well, I like this instead of that, they may be over there thinking, you're coming against me, aren't you? Why are you doing that? Why are you thinking that way? Are you about to pull a trick on me? Because if you do, it's going to be curtains for you. And there's a sense of nonsense that goes along with that. These individuals have paranoia. They have an inability to trust. They're quite difficult to engage with. And so when you engage with them or when you're in their presence, they have no compunctions about creating pain toward you or causing misery. They will make themselves the victim whenever there's a problem. And if you try to be assertive, then they're going to squelch that real quickly, because it's like, you don't have the right to the opinions that implies. And then their anger tends to be very strong, to the point of over the top. They can either give very powerful rages, or they can hold you in deep contempt. They can hold grudges for a long, long time. Hatred is not something that's foreign to them in the least. Oh, when you think about this, it's exhausting, isn't it? And it's rather pitiable that someone would think, yeah, that's kind of the way I want to do my life. And of course, I don't even know that we can give them credit for thinking that deliberately about their intentions. It's just the way they're hardwired. And these are individuals that when you attempt to say, well, why don't we reason together? It's like, no, what other options do you have? Because that's not going to work. So I'm hoping that as you're able to see that there are indeed very troubled people out there who think like this and who act like this and who have somehow rationalized to themselves that it's really not just okay to think that way, but necessary. That I'm hoping you can see these are individuals that you want to have the least amount of closeness with or interaction with or being intertwined with, because it's only a matter of time, and usually it's a matter of a very brief amount of time before you're going to be in the pit. You're going to be held down in a way where you're robbed of your own distinctives and uniqueness. So let's talk about some of the things that you might want to consider if you're someone who's in the presence of an individual who's troubled in this kind of way. Now, first and foremost, what we're going to say is, obviously, you want to have the least amount of joint engagements with this person as possible. Now, I've known some people who will say, well, what I want to do is go no contact, but I just can't. Now, if you can, then that would be good. But it could be that it's someone that you work with and you don't have any other good work options right now, and so you're kind of stuck there. It may be that you have someone in the extended family and you want to engage with other members of the extended family, but this person sort of is there, and so how do you work around that? You know, those kind of things. But even so, whenever you know that that person is there, you want to have the least amount that you can do with it. And it's like, if that person's there, I'm going to wait till another time when they're not. Or if that person's there, I'm going to see if I can connect with someone who gets me and who understands me and who sees what's going on. But make sure that you minimize whatever openness and whatever engagement you might have with that individual. Now, speaking of that word openness, let's go to another thought. And that is, you simply cannot, and I can't underscore that enough, you cannot afford to share any kind of personal or vulnerable information or disclosure with that malignant narcissist. You know, going back to that lady who lived with the malignant narcissist who made her life an absolute terror, if she would say, I'm hurting, or I'm struggling, or I've already had this in my background and I don't want any more of it, then what he would do is make a mockery of it. It's not like he would sit down and say, I'm so sorry that you've had this experience. Please tell me more. Self-disclosure to the malignant narcissist is to them an invitation to slap you down even more. It's like, oh, you're down, you're struggling, you've had some difficulties. Well, this just proves that you're the loser that I already knew that you were, and so they'll just pile it on. And it's awful that they can think that way, but in fact, they are. They do. Now, these are fundamentally unhappy individuals. They're driven by despair. They're driven by pessimism, even though they try to put the veneer of power and authority on top of it. They have ridiculously low self-esteem. They have a lack of what we refer to as future thinking. In other words, they don't ask, where's all this going? Or if I continue in this vein, what kind of fallout might I experience? It's like, all I know is right now is what there's something I want, and you're the one that's getting in the way of me getting whatever I want. You're a hindrance. And so that's how they operate. So I hope that as I share these kinds of things with you, that it kind of can sober you up and make you realize this is not something that I'm making up. Whenever I see someone and I use that word, the I word, impossible, and I think this person's impossible, we're going to give that to you because they are. You don't want to plead with them. You don't want to expect any kind of healthy exchange, because any kind of discussion that might even hint at them needing to be a little bit different is going to be met with them coming at you in a harsh kind of way. And so it's good to know what you're dealing with. Now, another thought that I want to zero in on before we wrap here. One of the things that malignant narcissists, whether they're consciously aware of it or not, one of the things they do is it's like, I want to completely empty you of yourself. I refer to them as thieves. They're robbers, and they want to rob you of your own self. And then they want to fill you with them. And I'm hoping that you can remind yourself that can't happen entirely anyway without my cooperation. These are deeply troubled people. And so if they reject me and if they say that what I am is inadequate, I need to remind myself who I'm dealing with here. This is not someone, despite how strongly they may say it, this is not someone who's thought out the meaning of life very well at all. You may recall that I've mentioned before that one of the primary features, the defining features of narcissism is the lack of love. These individuals have no conception whatsoever of love or kindness or goodness or gentleness. They have no peace from the inside out to draw from. And you want to remind yourself, I cannot allow myself to take my cues from this person, and that individual is not the one who declares my worth. That person is not the one who's in charge of my sense of well-being, my regard for myself. And so you want to pull yourself away from that, reminding yourself, I'm dealing with someone who has such a poor, poor understanding of himself or herself. And as a result, they really don't know me very well at all. Now, I'm hoping that as you're aware of these kinds of tendencies and you see how they like to isolate you and keep you away from other individuals, I'm hoping that you can, in fact, take initiatives to seek support from healthy people with groups, support groups, or whatever it might be. The malignant narcissist may try to brainwash you into saying, well, those are people who are sorry and no good. But when you find individuals who do say, well, I'd like to love you, and I'd like to show you goodness and decency, take that as a compliment, and then I'm hoping you can become that kind of an individual yourself. You're going to be the one that chooses the high road. You don't have to respond to them in kind, but you can have an appreciation for the need of assertiveness, boundaries, stipulations, and above all, it's a reminder that says, I cannot afford to take my cues from this individual. And if that individual says they must dominate me, it's time for me to look for the exit, because this is not a healthy relationship in any sense of the word. So, like I say, Team Healthy, we have people down on the, let's call it narcissism light. And hopefully they're the ones that can have insight. But when you have people down here on the heavy end of it, there's hardly any real hope for redemption. I hate to say it that way, but once you know that and once you realize it, then it can position you to become your own best friend and your own initiator of the better alternatives. So please practice self-care and know that that there is this dignity, respect, and civility that we stand for here on Team Healthy, and that's something you can live into. And if the malignant narcissist comes along and debunks all of it, in your mind you can be thinking, right, I know, that's what you do, and that proves why I need to go down my path all the more. Okay, well, I hope this gives you some good food for thought, and if you have a need to find support, let me strongly encourage you to do that. Keep learning. You know that we have my videos on the Surviving Narcissism channel on YouTube, and so there are more things along the lines there too, and I'm just so glad that you allow me to be on your journey with you, and I shall see you next time.
Thank you for joining us for this week's podcast. We are so glad to have you on Team Healthy.